This podcast is not intended to be a scholarly or authoritative source. Never Have Y'all Ever is an entertainment podcast that explores Texas culture, history, and subcultures through personal experiences and opinions. We encourage listeners to conduct their own research, consult reliable sources for historical or cultural information. Giddy up. Let's get into it.
Now, they say everything's bigger in Texas. That's true, but what about the stores, the one we all knew?
All right. Are you all ready?
You're ready.
Giddy all right. Up. Giddy up.
Okay, we're back, and today we're talking about none other than the film classic, Dazed and Confused.
Oh, man.
Cult
classic.
Cult classic. What did I say?
I don't know.
Film classic.
Yeah, but I mean...
Film and cult.
Yeah.
Cult film.
I'm here for the cult.
Not every cult is in love with film.
Well, it's not all David Koresh either.
No.
Waco.
Well, and not far. Filmed in Austin.
So funny part about that, though, too, is that all of our listeners absolutely loved when we were talking about Waco at one point.
Yeah.
Like, oh, David Koresh. Everyone, like, I got so many private messages. They were like, oh, my God.
Yes.
Melissa. Yeah, so
that's
anyway.
Where our head goes.
On it?
This generation anyway, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, exactly.
It was just such
yes,
a
yes,
huge...
Yes.
Anyway, we digress. Dazed and Confused. One of the best movies of all time.
Start me off here because I don't know where to go because there are so many great avenues to peep.
So, director, writer, Richard Linklater.
The you love.
I love.
That.
Native Houstonian. First fact, Linklater wanted Dazed to Confuse to be the anti-John Hughes movie. Instead of a structured high school story with clear winners and losers, he focused on a realistic meandering slice. I love that. Realistic meandering slice.
Meandering is such a great word.
Of teenage life, much like his own experiences growing up in Huntsville, Texas, which is in the Piney Woods of East Texas, for our listeners that
which also
there.
Has a huge prison population. And
that's where you stay. What state prisons
are. I know. As I'm driving through, they always have the signs posted, do not pick up hitchhikers. I'm like, no problem.
Listen, you won't catch me camping at the Huntsville State Park.
So, and I will still say that the very first time that I drove through there, I was stopped at a Starbucks, and there was a very questionable gentleman that was there, and it led me to buying a gun in Houston.
See? So colorful folk from Huntsville.
Oh, it's colorful.
It's colorful. But Linklater, let's talk about the anti-John Hughes movie. Okay, so John Hughes, I mean, what an incredible influence, especially for our generation. I mean, 16 Candles,
dude.
Come on. Pretty in Pink. And then, and what's our theme song from the one You and I Love? With the kids
about?
And all in detention.
School's Out for Summer?
No, where all the kids are. It's a John Hughes movie where they're all in detention together.
Oh, Breakfast Club.
Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I never discussed that movie with you ever.
No, it's our theme song. Anyway, it's our song. It's
but
fine.
But Breakfast
care.
Club. It's amazing.
I don't remember.
Okay. Anyway, but that's the Breakfast Club, perfect segue, because if you think about the Breakfast Club, there are just kind of like the clear cut, like prep, jock, goth, you know, kind of druggy.
In fact, it's really interesting because Molly Ringwald today came out with an interview that actually went live yesterday about how she didn't think that particular movie now represents that time and period.
Sure.
For the diversification of stuff.
Yeah. What did they say here? The meandering slice.
And so that's why I say that to get to your point, because this was.
Well, and I do think that Linklater does it well. And it does stand apart, because if you think about the characters in this movie, and first I'll say it, if you haven't seen this movie, stop everything and go watch it.
Yes.
Immediately.
Yep.
But you'll find that the characters in this movie, they do kind of move in this sort of gray area. You know, there's not like the jock is sort of the plot is the football star wants to kind of do his own thing.
He wants to buck the system.
He wants to smoke pot, and he doesn't want to be drug tested. And,
yeah.
You know, and he has friends from all walks of life, and he's not just a jock. And then you have, again, and then you have like Matthew McConaughey in the movie that's a major character. We'll talk about that a little bit later more. But he's like this older guy that's not even in high school, right? But he's a huge character in the movie and like and kind of hanging out with the kids, which is weird, but cool. He makes it fine. But, you know, I think Linklater nailed it. And I know when I was in high school, I definitely didn't feel like I was in any one group. Like I just kind of was friends with everybody. And that was cool, but it was also difficult because I never really felt like I had like a strong like clique, like a crew, if you will. Like I just kind of meandered.
I think that that's where you and I, like our worlds do collide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't either. And I, you know, was a very, from the outside looking in, I think that you could look at me and I was a very stereotypical cheerleader,
sure.
West Texas. However, I was also like
blonde dating the football star.
I was, yeah. You know, yeah. But I was also in the back of the class with, you know, the misfits.
Sure, making bombs in woodshop.
Fuck yeah, like, yeah. And then, you know, and like getting into trouble, and you know the band folks, which I always thought got such a really bad rap. But I think that this movie, you know, taking place and starting in somebody's, you know, senior, you know, like first day of their senior year, pretty much does such a great depiction of every single class and, you know, clique,
sure.
of high school,
yeah.
and what that means
and how blurry it actually
is. Well, and I also think that it goes a little bit further because you do see, you know, like what you're saying, you do see like, Matthew McConaughey, he's the guy that's transitioned out. And where does he fall? Does he have an identity without high school? He doesn't. You're seeing the guy that was probably in his place that is graduating. He doesn't want the piss test. He's mm-hmm. questioning all of these things to buck the system. And then you have this guy that's coming in that's like this, you know, baseball star that's getting into all of this. So I think that what's interesting about how he sets it up is you have somebody that's out of the system. You have somebody that's questioning it. And then you have somebody that's going into it
with the older sister.
Yes,
that's and like
then,
super.
And
cool.
So then there's all then there's all these pods around sure. it that makes it really, really like hit home because it hits on absolutely everybody.
And isn't his sister? What's her name?
She was cool.
Mia Jovovich or whatever.
No, that was the supermodel. That was the girlfriend of the guy that.
And she didn't have a lot of speaking parts because she didn't have great English.
She didn't know a word.
Yeah.
But she was just, also like, the gorgeous. Girl in Fifth Element.
Yeah.
And so her multi-pass.
Yeah.
In Fifth Element, but she didn't know.
But in the movie, you just see her. She's like chilling with her long hair
she's
and her bell bottoms.
She's smoking joints and that beautiful and amazing. And I loved her in it. And
oh, man.
I mean, do we want to go there on like characters?
We're actually the next
yet?
Fact is how the cast was found. So we're jumping into the cast.
Let's do it. Let's
That's
go.
That's a great jumping off point. So fact number two. How the cast was found. Some actors, like Ben Affleck, O'Banion, were already working in Hollywood.
O'Banion. That's so Irish.
Yeah. While others, like Parker Posey, Darla, came from the indie scene. Future Oscar winner Renee Zellweger was even an extra in the film. Matthew McConaughey's lucky break. Matthew McConaughey was at the University of Texas when he met a casting director at an Austin bar. He wasn't originally supposed to be in much of the movie, but his effortless charm in his audition led to the expansion of Wooderson, the older guy.
Great name.
Wooderson's role, giving us all right, all right, all right in the process.
L-I-V-I-N.
And then also Cole Hauser, before he was Rip on Yellowstone, he played Benny, one of the aggressive football jocks in Dazed and Confused. It was one of his earliest film roles, and he fit right in with the mix of seasoned actors and fresh faces.
Mm.
So, wow. Like, what a mix. Like, you've got some, like, Hollywood stardom, and then you've got these, like, indie folks all coming together to just, like, do this really cool shit in Austin with Richard Linklater.
I mean, I think that's also what makes it so cool looking back on is there's like this little small film and somebody was like, everyone took a chance on each other.
They did.
Because they were like, this is good.
Sure.
And that's what I love about it the most is that, I mean, you know, it has to be a low budget film. And I'm sure the music cost more than it took to film everything.
Sure.
soundtrack.
Well, let's talk about filming in Austin a little bit. And what's happening with film in Texas now. And how this was kind of way before its time.
It really was. And now it's a movement. I mean, now you see, you know, Woody and also Matthew McConaughey, like, on the Hill, mm-hmm. you know, basically, you know, vouching for Texas, saying, you know, bring this talent here. And mm-hmm. I think that, to your point, this movie is such a great example of what you can do.
Sure.
For me, so getting back to the actors and actresses, though.
Yeah.
So first and foremost, Matthew McConaughey will always be the guy in Trisha Yearwood's music video on CMT with Don McLean.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, God. Okay. I remember him from that.
I thought it was Don McLean.
Yeah. No, not Don McLean. Damn it, the Eagles guy. Anyway.
I fucking hate the Eagles, man.
We're going to pull this car over. You're getting out. But so... he was incredible. Parker Posey, she nailed this role so much that you're forever going to hold a little bit of animosity towards her.
Sure.
Because she was that senior bitch
mm-hmm.
that really took it home.
Oh, yeah.
Fry freshman bitches.
I mean, fry.
Yeah.
Ben Affleck, the little chiclet teeth.
Yeah.
I love the fact that I just found this out the other day that, like, his paddle that he was, like, trying to, like, slam freshmen's asses with, he hit so hard after he got, like, pelted with paint.
Yeah.
It shattered his shin or his ankle.
In the scene.
His ankle. Still got in the car and drove off and nailed the scene. I mean, it's brilliant. The whole thing was so brilliant. And I want to know how much of it was ad-libbed.
Yeah,
I would love to see a script.
Yeah.
Improv.
Yes. Well, I know All Right, All Right, All Right is famously improv. I think. Milan will have to double check.
Well, isn't that the other one, too, the claim to fame is L-I-V-I-N.
L-I-V-I-N.
I love high school girls. They stay the same age. I get older.
Yeah, the whole thing
it's
is.
It's amazing. It's a quotable thing, and... I don't know. Is it outside of Texas?
But it's so... Well, back to that, the high school girls stay the same age. And that scene where the redhead gal with the fro is, like, sitting with the nerds in the car. And Matthew McConaughey, Wooderson's hitting on her. And she's
at
like...
At the drive-up.
And she's like, okay, hey. And the guys in the car were like, you are so gross.
Yeah.
Like, are you serious?
Yeah.
And
she's so like, old. I know. I love the fact that he carved out like that character because I can't.
And realistic.
You know, well, in hindsight is clearly 2020, but like for me, he did carry the movie.
Yeah.
And he's carried it to modern day. And how funny is it that universally all of it came together like that?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I'd like to see, you know, obviously Parker Posey's role in
White Lotus.
White Lotus. Has now caused this whole culture where we're quoting and re-quoting her. Like, I almost had a grand mal seizure. And, you know, Taiwan.
the Taiwan thing had me breaking down.
Like, I'd like to bring it all the way. Like, let's go Parker Posey old school. Bring that back. Like, fry yeah. freshman bitches.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm going to say.
She actually didn't say that.
She did.
No.
No, it was the blonde that said fry whatever.
Oh, dang.
Yeah. It was Amy. What's her name?
Who was the lady in
Renee Zellweger?
Yes, it was her.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll have to go back and check.
Yeah.
I think we differ, but we'll figure it out.
So okay.
Well, but
maybe I'm wrong.
The funny part about Posey Parker, and also it's so great to see her with another Southern accent.
Yes.
Yes.
And that's hard to do, by the way.
And
I personally feel like I can really give some tips.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, flatten your eyes.
Right.
And she's good, but she nailed it. But, yeah, that lineup, man, is strong.
It's strong. And it's funny because, like I said earlier, you know, this was back when, you know, filmmaking really wasn't happening that much in Texas. Even the old westerns that are supposed to be Texas, much of it were filmed in... Spaghetti westerns. They weren't filmed here. And so it's just kind of wild to me. And now we're seeing this huge movement with all of Taylor Sheridan's work where filming, and like you said, Matthew McConaughey, alongside, what's the other one?
Woody.
Woody, and then
Midland Boy.
And Dennis Quaid. They're all at the Capitol speaking in favor for filming in Texas and what it can bring to the state of Texas.
You know, I have mixed feelings because I clearly don't have a crystal ball on this. You know, I'm clearly being, you know, living in Dallas and coming over to Fort Worth, you have that entire saying that it's like, don't Dallas my Fort Worth. Mm-hmm. And as Texans, we also carry that slogan where it's like, don't California my Texan or Texas. And so I would like to see where it goes. I'm a little bit apprehensive over it.
Sure.
But Sheridan has done something I find really inspirational. I'm very thankful over it to bring it to Texas, to put a lens on Texas. We'll see where it goes.
You know, it's funny, and we had talked about this, I think, in one of our past episodes, but one of my really good friends from Chicago came to visit me for the first time years ago in Texas, and I took her down to the Stockyards in Fort Worth, which is such quintessential cowboy culture, what you imagine Texas to be like. But even still, when I took her there, she was like, oh, it's real, you know? And so to your point, this lens that he's kind of giving, no, it is, it's really, that is really how we're living. I mean, I think it's more diverse than people give us credit for. And I know it is, especially from Houston.
Yeah, exactly. But Houston's the best about it.
But some of this shit's really happening here. And you've talking with your mother about 1976 and what it was like to be a senior in high school in 1976 in Texas. She said, Dazed and Confused, nailed it.
So it was hysterical. So I knew this conversation was coming up, and it takes place in 1976, which is a bicentennial year, 200th anniversary of the state, which sounds so young, by the way. Like, how are we only that old?
Sure. As a country.
That young, as a country.
Not just a state, as a country.
Mind-blowing.
Right.
But anyway, my mom was actually a senior in Big Spring, Texas. So we're talking at the heart of West Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was telling her about this movie and our topic, and I was like, Have you seen this?
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, no, I haven't. And actually, I'm really bored out of my mind today. And I was like, go watch this. It was like an hour and a half later that she was like, Lindsay, this is so spot on.
Yeah.
And the one particular scene that she called me over was her and her friend Cindy used to do this where they would lay down. And the jeans were so tight with such big zippers, they would take needle nose pliers to zip them.
Yeah.
And then it would take their friend to pull them up off of the bed or wherever they were, like, zipping them up. And my mom was like, holy shit. I mean, I used to do that. And I remember my mom talking to me about that.
Sure.
You know, and I just thought, oh, my God, y'all are crazy. And when I saw that in the movie, I was like, man, this thing might really be legit. And I remember that was years ago that I saw it. But I was like, my mom had that same story. And it was the bicentennial year, the red, white, and the blues. It was so weirdly accurate. Mm-hmm. And then to have my mom call me whenever she finished the movie, and she was like, Lindsay, she felt like she basically stepped back in time. That's how well done it was.
It is. Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Did we figure out the math on what it would be now if it was made today? It's like 2001 or something.
But I thought that you said that it was like, if that was filmed today, that would basically be like it was filming something in 2001, which was my senior year.
Yeah, yeah.
So no Kias, Mustangs. I mean, it's wild.
Well, and you know, I just want to call this on while we're recording. Talking of the actors that are now stepping up, supporting film in Texas. So we talked about Matthew McConaughey, Woody, and Dennis Quaid. So Dennis Quaid went to my high school, and
I couldn't remember where he was from.
He's from Houston. Okay. And call me, or I'm saying it now. Dennis Quaid is about to Matthew McConaughey, University of Houston. I think he's going to do it. I mean, he's going to be all go
good as he should,
and go U of H. Love you guys. But yes, I just wanted to say that out loud.
You know, I love it. I feel like those guys are great mascots.
You know, Matthew McConaughey.
My gosh, and I got to tell you something. If you have not listened to the story behind Woody's dad, it is fascinating.
Oh, I think each of them is a whole episode for sure.
Oh,
Woody's your favorite Texan.
He is.
Yeah.
So it was like a knee-jerk reaction the very first time you asked me that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, McConaughey. And then I don't know if you recall, but like I went away and called you probably like 3 or 4 days later. I was like, you know what? That one's accurate.
Mm-hmm. It's Woody.
Freaking love me some Woody.
Woody.
And not.
Oh, yeah. real quick, though, going back to the characters, we want to like. We just lost one of the characters. His Nicky, but I don't know if I'm saying this right, Nicky Cat. He played Clint.
So he was the guy.
He was when I got in the fight with Mike.
Right. He was with the redhead in the car that was like, I had a dream about Lincoln. I had a sex dream about Lincoln. Was it that guy?
That was the guy that got in the fight with the guy.
Okay.
Yeah, we lost him. He just passed away at, I believe, 54 by suicide.
Oh, yeah.
It's a pink.
Shout out.
All right. I think that's a good time to take a break for our sponsors, have a moment of peace.
Yeah, on the dream about Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it.
At Trevo Creative, that's Trevo. We're a full service marketing agency that makes your business look good and get noticed. We believe every brand has a unique story to tell. We make sure you look good, sound good, and have the perfect script. Visit TrevoCreative.com to learn more about how we can turn bold ideas into unforgettable brands. What's your story?
We're back from our break. Let's giddy up.
All right, giddy up. The Moon Tower is real. The legendary keg party spot in the film is based on Austin's historic moon towers, which were installed in the 1890s as a citywide lighting system. They still exist today, and the one featured in the movie is in Zilker Park. Key filming locations included Bedecheck Middle School, the high school exterior, and Top Notch Hamburgers, Wooderson's famous...
That's what I love about these high school girls, man. I get older, they stay the same age.
Scene. All right. Bedecheck Middle School and Top Notch. I haven't been there. I have been to Zilker Park a whole lot. I've been to the Moon Towers in Austin a whole lot.
One thing that stood out to me in that movie when I recently rewatched it before this, doing my homework, was that school was on fucking point.
What do you mean?
The hallways.
Oh, just wait.
The
looks.
Lockers.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, whoever scouted that did some serious homework. That was,
to be fair, I don't know if the education budget had changed much from the 70s to the 90s in the state of Texas.
Okay.
So it was probably actually just kind of
I agree. I went to Lehigh and Midland was our stuff was pretty
high schools now are
dated
insane.
As well.
But
okay, so the Moon Tower stuff I actually had to do my homework on.
Yeah.
Incredibly interesting. They are, I think, the only ones that are still up and operational.
Oh, they're like still a lighting system.
Yes. Like, I think that there were like 17 of those systems made, and they are still the one that's like still up and operational.
I wonder what are they lighting?
The town.
I mean, but like, are they running off? Like, how are they? I don't know. I'll have to look at that.
I do too. And I need to revamp. But so here's my like thing about that is that around all of these towers is flat open ground.
Sure.
And you don't have that in the hill country.
No.
So in West Texas, I mean, we could sit there and like spit on something and it was flat as could be. We could throw a party there anytime.
Don't we say you watch your dog run away for 3 days?
100%. Yes.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's probably the allure to those spots like that, especially in Austin, is the fact that it's like
just one big open space.
It's an open space to congregate and it draws you in. So,
I mean, the thing I think about with the Moon Tower is even that 70s show where they're always climbing to the top of the Moon Tower.
What was it with heights?
I can't with those tiny ladders and after like drinking and smoking pot and whatever else you're doing out there.
It's probably a lot of obits over that.
Not a good idea. That would not be a Melissa safe scenario.
Or Lindsay.
No. Number four, It flopped at first, but became legendary. Despite its now iconic status, Dazed and Confused only made $8 million at the box office, but it exploded in popularity later. The soundtrack, home video releases, and cult midnight screenings turned it into one of the most beloved coming-of-age films of all time.
I feel like those numbers are accurate, and I have an opinion on this. I think that when you do something that well, that's that great, that bucks the system of mainstream, that it takes a minute for it to, like, actually catch.
Resonate, yeah.
And so I do feel like it was ahead of its time.
It's kind of like Napoleon Dynamite. Like, I had to watch it, like, four times before I was like, oh, I get it.
You know, it was the same way. The first one, I was like, did I really spend my life on, like, watching this? And then, like, you know, but so I feel the same way about this movie. I feel like I think I kind of remember, like, listening or watching it the first time and thinking, like, well, I was a little, like, anticlimactic. But the older you get, it ages with you. I mean, mm-hmm. It's almost like a Pride and Prejudice. It's like you can come back to it, and it, at different stages of your life, shit is different.
What is that book everybody gets, The Places You'll Go? And it's, like, written for 5-year-olds, but it's also written for 18-year-olds and 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds. I think that's what you're saying.
Like, it ages with you.
Yeah. And I think you know, we've talked about this before. As many times as we've seen the movie, every time you watch it, you notice some new nuance that you didn't find.
It's like people reread books.
Yeah.
You know, it changes with you.
It really does.
And it is. It's weathering the course.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then it's also serving as a total time machine, says my mom, that was there to live it.
Right.
You know, that she was like, Lindsay, this is so spot on that he caught 20 years later a moment in time,
yeah,
and that we're still able to look back on and appreciate, because nowadays everything is on your phone, and if it's not within, you know, like, live streaming, then it doesn't count. But he did.
Uh-huh.
I mean, and they
how great would it be if they did a remake and they kept
I cannot do remakes.
What, you liked the one, which one?
Pride Prejudice?
No. What? With Tom Cruise.
Maverick.
Top Gun. You liked Top Gun, the remake. You liked that one.
I mean, it wasn't a 10 out of a 10.
Yeah. It was pretty good.
Milan disagrees.
It was. And I'm aware and I get it.
Yeah.
And also, kudos to Val Kilmer.
Cheers, Val Kilmer.
Yeah. But I don't need a remake. I don't need a Matthew McConaughey with, like, a grandkid or a kid in high school to come back and redo that. Just leave it alone. When it's greatness, don't touch it.
Don't touch it.
Leave it alone.
Well, I will say, I have a friend of mine thinks that if they ever remade Urban Cowboy.
Oh, God.
That the guy from Top Gun remake. What's the kid's name? He's got this small
Glenn. Oh, the Miles Teller. Miles
that Tell, he would be the new John Travolta in Urban Cowboy.
No. Okay.
And if
I can't do that, you know, we can't do that because there's not a Johnny Lee. And you say Urban Cowboy to me, and I go straight to the soundtrack, and there's no Johnny Lee.
Well, let's talk
about
who's
going to do a Johnny Lee.
Let's talk about the soundtrack of Dazed and Confused. Okay. I wasn't a huge, I mean, back then, we were still buying records at the store. Like, we went to the store to buy CDs. Not records, but we bought CDs.
I was gonna say, I don't know if I actually
But we were buying albums, is what I mean, like, at the store. But I listened to artists. I didn't listen to movie soundtracks. This movie soundtrack is insane. Like, you know, we were talking about earlier, Aerosmith, ZZ Top, Lynyrd Skynyrd. I mean, Alice Cooper.
You know,
it's just as good as, like, Forrest Gump soundtrack.
It's insane. My gosh. It's a double disc, blue and red disc. Yeah. I got them all. Like, don't get me started on Forrest. But I think that what's important here is that, so that particular soundtrack did not do it for me because I didn't know. But to your point, the Almost Famous one is the first one that really introduced me to, like, the old school,
sure,
like the shit that my parents didn't listen to, because my parents were like, my mom was a Buckle Bunny, you know, my dad
was a Buckle Bunny.
Yeah. Just being West Texas, they were the Johnny Cashes and the,
sure,
you know, so I didn't get that exposure. And I think that what's really important about movies like that and where their budget went with the music was to set off a moment in time, because I think that you can sit there on screen and have everything in front of you, but if you hear something,
uh-huh,
you go straight back to it.
Mm-hmm.
if you smell something, which clearly you can't do on screen. So I really think that it was brilliant that if you're talking about budgets, that it was spent on sound, because it takes you right back to it. And that's exactly what he wanted to do.
Oh, well, and it's a piece of art. I mean, and what is the saying? Eddie Izzard says this in one of his stand-ups. He's one of my favorite comedians.
I know.
He talks about, he said, when you're public speaking, and in this case, making a movie, but it's 80%.
Same thing.
What is it? 70% how you look, right? And we've talked about how they nailed the look.
Yes.
20% how you sound, and only 10% what you actually fucking say. That resonates.
Interesting.
It's how you look and how you sound. And I think Linklater considered that deeply when he made this film.
I think that I actually look at it like that and as a viewer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very cool and relatable for sure. Okay. We have anything else on that? Soundtrack, video, cult midnight screenings.
I think that the only thing you're missing out on that I thought was a really cool thing is the patch on
the button. My mom was really good friends with the costume designer for this film, and her name is Melanie Armstrong. She lives in the Maine, I want to say, Northeast America,
one of the best hidden states in the U.S.
But she's from Texas, and Linklater hired her to do the costume for that movie. And my mom was good friends with her sister. And so when they were putting together ideas, my mom always told me growing up that her two things, the pin that the husky kid wears, the little smiley face pin on his jeans, was her idea. And then the puka shell necklace that the football star wears was my mom's. And of course, back then I was like, okay, mom.
Whatever.
But I mean, wow, like kind of.
I just think that iconic. Goes to just how genuine and attention to detail.
Well, and also back to Linklater, like he hired Texans to make this thing.
Yeah.
You know, and to get it off the ground, which is pretty cool. He didn't, you know, I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So anyway,
go watch it. You guys have got to watch it. If you don't know what we're talking about, stop the episode in minute two. Go watch it. You've got to see this thing.
You've got to see it.
Yeah.
I would say it's as important as like Fast Times at Ridgemont High, you know, those type of movies. Those lived in my VHS collection through my 20s. Oh, for sure. And that's what I would watch over and over and over again. The last fact, the film had no official script for extras. Director Richard Linklater encouraged improvisation, and many of the background scenes, like party moments and hallway chatter, were unscripted to keep it authentic. So that just gave me goosebumps. That's really, really cool. Like he hired, it's like a chef. We've talked about this before. It's like getting all the right ingredients and just letting it happen.
Well, you got to trust.
Mm-hmm.
You got to trust in the fact that you chose correctly and that it's just going to be this thing and they're going to make that vision come to life. That's a lot of trust.
It is. It's huge. I'd love to learn more about what was improvised in that film. That, like, if for sure, All Right, All Right, All Right was improv.
You know, I would love that. Yeah. I would love to see what improv feels and sounds like in a situation like that.
Yeah.
You know, because I know that it happens often.
Yeah. You know what's funny? When I hear it, I can even see Matthew McConaughey in that scene, like standing outside the bowling alley, like kind of cocking his hip, looking around.
Those pants.
Yeah.
Dude, I just go to the pants and like also the t-shirt.
It's perfect.
Man, the hair. I mean, just like, God. Did you,
side note, did you play in a lot of pool halls when you were in high school?
Not one time.
Okay. So that was a big thing when I was in high school, because a lot of the pool halls in Houston, you didn't have to be 18 to go in there.
Okay.
And so there was a couple pool halls and they were no longer in existence. And they would let, we would drink in the parking lot and then we would go inside and play pool.
Wild. Did your parents know you were there?
And of course not.
Okay.
Either way, I got insanely good at pool there for a couple of years. Yeah. I could do like the backwards and all the things. So
because that was cool.
That's where you, as a woman, you get to kind of like, show your shit. Yeah. Okay. And just really throw them off. But it's funny because that movie, when I watched it, the pool hall scene, I'm like, I totally resonated with me because we were in pool halls all the time.
No, never. Not one time, even to this day.
Yeah.
Have I ever really been in a pool hall?
Oh, we'll have to go. Okay. I'm sure I'm a little rusty, but I'll show you.
I'm not saying I'm playing. I'm just saying I'll go. There's a huge difference.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Well, hit us with some facts or fiction, Milan.
All right. Matthew McConaughey's iconic line, "All right, all right, all right," was scripted and rehearsed multiple times.
Ooh. I'm going to say false. I just took a drink. I'm going to say false.
I don't think that that was scripted.
Yeah, so you agree?
I agree. It's false. Uh-huh. I think it's false. I think that he did that on his own.
Fiction. McConaughey improvised it on set. It was his first line ever in a movie.
Oh, I didn't know that was his first line ever in a movie. That's cool, dude.
Because I watched it, like, he did it, like, something on YouTube where he's like, okay, he's got the women, all right. He's got the car, all
right. Right.
And then something else. It might have been drugs, I don't know.
Well, in the party.
Party. And so he's like, he had three out of the four. So he's like, all right,
all
right.
Little did we know he would have the tuna fish recipe that would, like, change a generation after.
Oh, my God.
What?
Did you not know about this?
No, I didn't know about that.
Oh, there's a Matthew McConaughey tuna fish recipe that it's like wasabi.
And he eats it on several times.
Frozen peas. I mean, the shit that goes into this thing is an entire Albertsons list.
Uh-huh.
And I still haven't tried it yet, but it's supposed to be amazing. But yeah, he's known for that slogan. And now he's known for tuna fish right now. Oh, tuna fish.
Fantastic. All right, all right. The filmmaker, okay, fact or fiction. The filmmakers had to invent a fake beer called beer because real companies didn't want to be associated with teen drinking.
Oh, I would say for sure that's true.
This sounds so Homer Simpson.
A Texas 90s, yeah.
It is fact. Most beer companies declined, so they used generic beer cans throughout the film.
Dude, for real. Good Lord. Can you imagine like a distillery or a brewery like having that can?
Well, and you remember the scene when the freshman, the baseball player goes in to buy beer?
Oh, yeah.
And he's like trying to be cool. Like, how many times have you been that? I've been that kid.
Well, I was just telling you, like on another episode, like we used to like grab the guy's attention and like we were like siphoning 30 packs.
Totally.
Yeah.
I remember my grandpa, he would drink beer. It was a white label and it said beer on it, and on the lid had a riddle on it you had to figure out.
That Lone Star beers do that.
Lollipops also do that too.
It was white label and said beer on it.
It's like when I worked at Gristmill Green Hall, I would, anytime anybody ordered a Lone Star, I'd keep their beer caps in my apron. And because when I got bored, I'd pick them up and I'd try to figure out the riddle.
This is why you're creative and you're thoughtful, but go on.
That's a great story.
Like, yeah. I would have been like, oh, that's a good one. Like, a fortune cookie. I'd be like, oh, great. And then you're like, oh, I'm going to keep them in my apron and read later.
Yeah. Right. Well, as always, I love these days that we get to produce.
These are so fun.
And conjure up some amazing memories. And
nostalgia.
And hopefully gain some new fans of this awesome movie that everybody needs to go and watch.
Definitely.
Even if they've watched it, go watch it again.
Yeah. I was on Prime watching it. I mean, like, had to stop it multiple times to laugh or tell a story.
Yes.
That's how they bring in. You get brought in. It was amazing. So, yeah, go do your homework, fans. And also, a shout out to my mom.
Yeah.
Really appreciate the bicentennial coolness. And the stories that came from hearing from her and relating the two. It was really,
very cool. Yeah. All right. Well, join us next time on Never Happy Liver.
Giddy up.
Giddy up.
Gather round, y'all. We're ready to share a Texas-sized story that's beyond compare.